Good evening, I'm William Cooper, and you're listening to the Hour of the Time. The BBS is back online. Folks, for those of you who are CAGI members, however, we had to purge the user database. So you'll have to log on again, leave a message for the SysOp that you are a CAGI member or a member of the Intelligence Service, and we will upgrade your board clearance. Now, tonight, if you want to check out the board, you won't be able to do anything on it. Just look around. But you can leave your message so that we can have you upgraded tomorrow when we move the computer over here. Right now, it is at this phone number, and it's online, 602-333-4578. That's 602-333-4578. Tomorrow morning, it will be taken offline. It will be brought to the Research Center and Library. And the new number will be 602-337-2592. That's 602-337-2592. There are some over 2,000 files of legal information, common law information, constitutional information, intelligence information, who done what to who when, and the things that you never dreamed of in your entire life, I guarantee you. Also, folks, I need you to do something right away. There's a bill in Congress that is coming up for a vote. Now, this has got to be done now, folks. You must phone your congressman. It's H.R. 3261. Phone your congressman, not your senator. Your congressman, not your senator. Okay? And keep phoning. And keep phoning. And keep phoning. The name of the bill is H.R. House Resolution 3261. That's House Resolution 3261. Again, House Resolution 3261. You must begin calling now and you must continue to call. This is a bill that will literally force the IRS to deal legally instead of under the color of law. It will make individual agents responsible for their own legal costs and litigation costs and court judgments arising from arbitrary, capricious, or malicious acts and for other purposes. You must press your congressman to pass this bill. You must do it, ladies and gentlemen. If you don't, then you're going to still have a hard, hard time, a hard road ahead with the illegal, unconstitutional, criminal Internal Revenue Service. Do that now. If you don't know the number of your congressman, call tomorrow, and we'll give it to you. If you're too lazy to find out any other way, we'll give it to you, and we won't give you a hard time. Call us tomorrow at 602-337-2562. That's 602-337-2562. We'll give you the number of your state congressman, your state representative. Okay? Now, I hope you all have pen and paper ready, because tonight, ladies and gentlemen, is a big night. It's the beginning of a long series. We're going to repeat what we broadcast in late May or early June 1992 on mind control, and we're going to bring you up to date with a lot of new information. This series could take 3 or 4 weeks. I guarantee you it's going to take all of this week with no problems, whatsoever. So, don't go away. You don't even want to miss one second of this series or any of the broadcasts in this series. Mind control in America. Tonight's broadcast, ladies and gentlemen, is based upon a series of articles in the Napa Sentinel. Between August 1991 and November 1991, the research of William Cooper and the members of the Citizens Agency for Joint Intelligence, many references on the subject, and I'm going to read you a short bibliography. Acid Dreams by Martin Lee and Bruce Schlain. From the Belly of the Beast by Jack Henry Abbott. The Congressional Record No. 26, Volume 118, February 24, 1974, Testimony of Jose Delgado. The Glass House Tapes by Lewis Tackwood. The Great Heroin Coup by Henrik Kruger. Individual Rights and the Federal Role in Behavior Modification, 93rd Congress, 2nd Session, 1974, Sam Ervin, Senate Subcommittee on Constitutional Rights. The Last Hero, Wild Bill Donovan by Anthony Cave Brown. Mind Control by Peter Schrag. The Mind Stealers by Samuel Chavkin. Matador with a Radio Stops Wild Bull, New York Times, May 17, 1965. Operation Mind Control by Walter Bowert. The Phoenix Program by Douglas Valentine. The Physical Control of the Mind by Jose M. R. Delgado, M.D. The Politics of Heroin in Southeast Asia by Alfred McCoy. Role of Brain Disease in Riots and Urban Violence by Vernon H. Mark, Frank R. Irvin, and William H. Sweet, Journal of the American Medical Association, September 11, 1967. The San Francisco Bay Guardian, August 28, 1991. Convict Talks of 1984, Arms Talks with Iran, in the San Francisco Chronicle, December 29, 1986. The San Francisco Chronicle, January 13, 1973. Guy Wright Column, San Francisco Chronicle, July 5, 1987. The Sunday Times, July 1975. Violence and the Brain by Vernon H. Mark and Frank R. Irvin. War on the Mind, The Military Uses and Abuses of Psychology by Peter Watson. Were We Controlled by Lincoln Lawrence. Why Was Patricia Hearst Kidnapped by Mae Brussel, The Realist, and Other Select Readings. Mae Brussel was so close to the truth, ladies and gentlemen, she was eventually murdered. And her library was taken over by people who have done nothing since to get close to the truth. Just keep you confused and going around in circles. There was just a small news announcement on the radio in early July. After a short heat wave in 1991, three inmates of Vacaville, California Medical Facility had died in non-air-conditioned cells. Two of those prisoners, ladies and gentlemen, the announcement said, may have died as a result of medical treatment, but no media inquiries were made, no major news stories developed because of these deaths, and no one asked what medical treatment. So what was the reason for these deaths? What was this supposed medical treatment that resulted in the deaths of these three inmates? The medical facility indicates, ladies and gentlemen, that they were mind control, or what they call behavior modification treatments. A deeper probe into the death of these two inmates unravels a mind-boggling tale of horror that has been part of California penal history for a long, long time. And it is, of course, is one that caused national outcries less than two decades ago. Most of you will not remember. But mind control experiments have been a part of California for decades, ladies and gentlemen, and they permeate the mental institutions and prisons. Another very famous location of mind control experiments by the Central Intelligence Agency and others is the nation of Canada. But it's not just in the penal society that mind control measures have been used. You see, minority children were subjected to experimentation at abandoned Nike missile sites. Veterans who fought for American freedom were also subjected to the programs, without their knowledge, of course. Many veterans who go to the VA for help find themselves subjects of bizarre experiments that sometimes leaves them deranged and helpless for the rest of their life. Funding and experimentations of mind control have been a part of the United States Health, Education, and Welfare Department, the Department of Veterans Affairs, the Central Intelligence Agency through the Phoenix Program, which Bobo Gritz claims to have been a part of, the Stanford Research Institute, the Agency for International Development, the Department of Defense, the Department of Labor, the National Institute of Mental Health, the Law Enforcement Assistance Administration, and the National Science Foundation. California, ladies and gentlemen, has been in the forefront of mind control experimentation. Government experiments also were conducted in the Haight-Ashbury district in San Francisco at the height of the hippie reign. In 1974, Senator Sam Irwin of Watergate fame headed a United States Senate subcommittee on constitutional rights studying the subject of individual rights and the federal role in behavior modification. Though little publicity was given to this committee's investigation, Senator Irwin issued a strong condemnation of the federal role in mind control. That condemnation, however, did not halt mind control experiments. They just received more circuitous funding, and many of them were moved to Canada. Many of the case histories concerning individuals of whom the mind control experiments were used show a very strange concept in the minds of those seeking guinea pigs. You see, those subject to the mind control experiments would be given indefinite sentences. The freedom was dependent upon how well the experiment went, or, of course, how well it didn't go, ensuring that the public would never see the disastrous results. The subject would just be kept incarcerated forever. Forever. One individual, for example, was arrested for joyriding. For joyriding, ladies and gentlemen, given a 2-year sentence and held for mind control experiments. He was held a total of 18 years. Now, here are just a few experiments used in the mind control programs, just brushing the surface, ladies and gentlemen. A naked inmate is strapped down on a board. His wrists and ankles are cuffed to the board, and his head is rigidly held in place by a strap around his neck and a helmet on his head. He's left in a darkened cell, unable to remove his body wastes. When a meal is delivered, one wrist is unlocked so he could feel around in the dark for his food and attempt to pour liquid down his throat without being able to lift his head. Another experiment creates a muscle relaxant. Within 30 to 40 seconds, paralysis begins to invade the small muscles of the fingers, toes, and eyes, and then the intercostal muscles and diaphragm. The heart slows down to about 60 beats per minute. This condition, together with respiratory arrests, sets in for as long as 2 to 5 minutes before the drug begins to wear off. The individual remains fully conscious and is gasping for breath. It is, and I quote, likened to dying, it is almost like drowning, unquote, the experiment states. Another drug induces vomiting and was administered to prisoners who didn't get up on time or were caught swearing or lying or even not greeting their guards formally. The treatment brings about uncontrolled vomiting that lasts from 15 minutes to an hour, accompanied by a temporary cardiovascular effect involving changes in the blood pressure. Now, you can see where this is going, ladies and gentlemen. It leads ultimately to total control of the individual. The Department of Health Education and Welfare in the United States Army have admitted mind control experiments, and many deaths have occurred, all on record. And many which are not on record. Records cannot be found. They've been destroyed or hidden or locked away or veiled by the all-encompassing curtain called national security, which in most instances turns out to be security of the criminals from the public citizens of the nation. Another experiment deals with creating body rigidness, aching restlessness, blurred vision, severe muscular pain, trembling, and fogged cognition. In tracing the steps of government mind control experiments, ladies and gentlemen, the trail leads to legal and illegal usages, usage for covert intelligence operations, and experiments on innocent people who were unaware that they were even being used as subjects in these draconian practices. There was a Senate subcommittee convened on November 1974. The Subcommittee on Constitutional Rights investigated federally funded behavior modification programs with emphasis on federal involvement in and the possible threat to individual constitutional rights of behavior modification, especially involving inmates in prisons and mental institutions. Can you imagine being mentally ill where you cannot make your own decisions? You're in a state of torment, indecision, and confusion already. And someone singles you out and begins to use you against your will, without your capacity to really even know what is happening, in one of these terrible experiments, which can lead to total insanity with the hope of no cure ever. Many, many other side effects and results and outcomes. The Senate committee, ladies and gentlemen, was appalled. Can you imagine that? They were appalled after reviewing documents from the following sources. The Neuro Research Foundation's study entitled The Medical Epidemiology of Criminals. The Center for the Study and Reduction of Violence from UCLA and the Closed Adolescent Treatment Center. Where are your children right now? A national uproar was created, folks, by various articles in 1974, which prompted the Senate investigation. But after all these years, the news that two inmates at Vacaville may have died from these same experiments indicates that though a nation was shocked in 1974, little was done to correct the experimentations. And in 1977, a Senate subcommittee on health and scientific research chaired by Senator Ted Kennedy focused on the CIA's testing of LSD on unwitting citizens. Only a mere handful of people within the CIA knew about the scope and details of the program. To understand the full scope of this problem, it's important to study some of its origins. The Kennedy subcommittee learned about the CIA operation dubbed MK Ultra through the testimony of Dr. Sidney Gottlieb. The purpose of the program, according to his testimony, was to investigate whether and how it was possible to modify an individual's behavior by covert means. Folks, to explain that to you, it means without the knowledge of the subject. I'll say that again. Investigate whether and how it was possible to modify an individual's behavior by covert means. This will all begin to take on special meaning to you at some point later on in this series. Claiming the protection of the National Security Act, Dr. Gottlieb was unwilling to tell the Senate subcommittee what had been learned or gained by these experiments. He did state, however, that the program was initially engendered by a concern that the Soviets and other enemies of the United States would get ahead of the United States in this field. Through the Freedom of Information Act, researchers are now able to obtain documents detailing the MK Ultra program and other Central Intelligence Agency behavior modification projects in a special reading room located on the bottom floor of the Hyatt Regency in Roslyn, Virginia. The most daring phase of the MK Ultra program involving slipping unwitting American citizens LSD in real life situations. The idea for the series of experiments originated in November of 1941 when William Donovan, also called Wild Bill Donovan, Knights Templar, member of the Knights of Malta, founder and director of the Office of Strategic Services, OSS, the forerunner of the Central Intelligence Agency during World War II. At that time, the intelligence agency invested $5,000 for the Truth Drug Program. Experiment with scopolamine and morphine proved both unfruitful and very dangerous. The program tested scores of other drugs, including mescaline, barbiturates, benzedrine, cannabis, indica, to name a few. Now, the United States was highly concerned at that time over the heavy losses of freighters and other ships in the North Atlantic, all victims of German U-boats. Information about German U-boat strategy was desperately needed. And it was believed that the information could be obtained through drug-influenced interrogations of German naval POWs, of course, in direct violation of the Geneva Accords. Tetrahydrocannabinol acetate, a colorless, odorless marijuana extract, was used to lace a cigarette or food substance without detection. Initially, the experiments were done on volunteer United States Army and OSS personnel, and testing was also disguised as a remedy for shell shock. Veterans who were shell-shocked, who went for treatment, were not told that they were being used as guinea pigs. The volunteers became known as Donovan's Dreamers. The experiments were so hush-hush that only a few top officials knew about them. President Franklin Roosevelt was aware of the experiments, and the Truth Drug achieved mixed success. The experiments were halted when a memo was written, quote, "The drug defies all but the most expert in search analysis and for all practical purposes can be considered beyond analysis," unquote. The OSS did not, however, halt the program. For in 1943, field tests of the extract were being conducted despite the order to halt them. Now they are intentionally disobeying direct orders. The most celebrated test was conducted by Captain George Hunter White, an OSS agent and ex-law enforcement official, who on August Del Grazio, also known as Augie Dallas, also known as Del, also known as Little Augie, a New York gangster. Cigarettes laced with the acetate were offered to Augie without his knowledge of the content. Augie, who had served time in prison for assault and murder, had been one of the world's most notorious drug dealers and smugglers. He operated an opium alkaloid factory in Turkey, and he was a leader in the Italian underworld on the Lower East Side of New York. Under the influence of the drug, Augie revealed volumes of information about the underworld operations, including the names of high-ranking officials who took bribes from the mob. These experiments led to the encouragement of Wild Bill Donovan, and a new memo was issued, and I quote, "Cigarette experiments indicated that we had a mechanism which offered promise in relaxing prisoners to be interrogated," end quote. Now, when the OSS was disbanded after the war, Captain White continued to administer behavior-modifying drugs, and in 1947, the Central Intelligence Agency replaced the OSS. White's service record indicates that he worked with the OSS, and by 1954, he was a high-ranking Federal Narcotics Bureau officer who had been loaned to the Central Intelligence Agency on a part-time basis. White rented an apartment in Greenwich Village, equipped with one-way mirrors, surveillance gadgets, and disguised himself as a seaman. White drugged his acquaintances with LSD and brought them back to his apartment. In 1955, the operation shifted to San Francisco. In San Francisco, safe houses were established under the code name Operation Midnight Climax. Midnight Climax hired prostitute addicts who lured men from bars back to the safe houses after their drinks had been spiked with LSD. White filmed the events in the safe houses. The purpose, ladies and gentlemen, of these national security brothels was to enable the Central Intelligence Agency to experiment with the act of lovemaking for extracting information from men. The safe house experiments continued until 1963, until Central Intelligence Agency Inspector General John Earman criticized Richard Helms, the director of the Central Intelligence Agency and father of the MK Ultra project. Earman charged the new director, John McCone, had not been fully briefed on the MK Ultra project when he took office, and that the concepts involved in manipulating human behavior are found by many people within and outside the agency to be distasteful and unethical. Wouldn't you say that that is quite an understatement, being as these experiments were being conducted on innocent, unsuspecting, unknowing, and unconsenting American citizens? Walks and stations of life. He went on to state that the rights and interests of U.S. citizens are placed in jeopardy. How nice of them to realize such a thing. But as you will see, foreign. Earman's criticisms were rebuffed by Helms, who warned positive operation capacity to use drugs is diminishing owing to a lack of realistic The Hour of the Time, ladies and gentlemen, is heard on the Omega Satellite Network, Galaxy 3, Channel 17, 5.8 wideband audio, and on WWCR, Worldwide Shortwave Radio, 5.810 megahertz on your dial. The Hour of the Time is brought to you by Swiss America Trading. They specialize in hard assets, non-reportable, non-confiscatable assets that you can use to protect what you have worked so hard during your life together for the future financial stability of your family. If you've been listening to the Hour of the Time for very long, you know what is coming in our near future, ladies and gentlemen, and you must prepare for it. Look around now at the faces of your loved ones. If you cannot honestly tell them at this point, at this time, at this very moment, that you have taken positive steps to protect their financial future, then you must call our sponsors and anyone else that you may find who may be able to offer a solution to your problem. Now, if you appreciate the information and the value that you receive from this broadcast, we hope that you will deal with our sponsor, Swiss America Trading. They're the only people that we know of in this particular field that I can back with my personal reputation will treat you fairly and will make sure that you know everything about your transaction and will deliver what they say they will deliver. Call them now at 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. Folks, it'll take a great weight off your shoulders. You'll be prepared and you won't have to worry, and neither will your family. So do it now. If you don't call our sponsors, call somebody. Make sure that you're prepared. 1-800-289-2646. Do it now. You'll be glad that you did. Tests, ladies and gentlemen, were necessary, Helms stated, to keep up with the Soviets. But in 1964, ladies and gentlemen, Helms had testified before the Warren Commission investigating the assassination of President John Kennedy that, and I quote, "Soviet research has consistently lagged 5 years behind Western research." Was he lying? Upon leaving government service in 1966, Captain White wrote a startling letter to his superior. In the letter to Dr. Gottlieb, Captain White reminisced about his work in the safe houses with LSD. His comments were frightening. I quote from that letter, "I was a very minor missionary, actually a heretic, but I toiled wholeheartedly in the vineyards because it was fun, fun, fun," end quote. White wrote, and I quote again, "Where else could a red-blooded American boy lie, kill, cheat, steal, rape, and pillage with the sanction and blessing of the All-Highest," end quote. Though the CIA continued to maintain drug experiments in the streets of America, ladies and gentlemen, after the program was officially canceled, the United States reaped tremendous value from it, according to their own testimony. With George Hunter White's connection to underworld figure Little Augie, connections were made with mafia kingpin Lucky Luciano, who was in Dannemora prison. Luciano wanted freedom. The mafia wanted drugs. And the United States wanted Sicily. The date was 1943. Augie was the go-between between Luciano and the United States War Department. Lucky Luciano was transferred to a less harsh prison and began to be visited by representatives of the Office of Naval Intelligence and from underworld figures such as Meyer Lansky. A strange, very strange alliance was formed between the United States intelligence agencies and the Mafia, who controlled the West Side docks in New York. And it continues to this very day. Luciano regained active leadership in organized crime in America with the help of those sworn to protect and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. The United States intelligence community utilized Luciano's underworld connections in Italy. In July of 1943, Allied forces launched their invasion of Sicily, the beginning push into occupied Europe. General George Patton's 7th Army advanced through hundreds of miles of territory that was fraught with difficulty, booby-trapped roads, snipers, confusing mountain topography, all within close range of 60,000 hostile Italian troops. And all this was accomplished in 4 days. A military miracle, even for General George S. Patton. Senate Estes Kefauver's Senate Subcommittee on Organized Crime asked in 1951 how all this was possible. The answer, ladies and gentlemen, was that the Mafia had helped to protect roads from Italian snipers, served as guides through treacherous mountain terrain, and provided needed intelligence to Patton's army. The part of Sicily which Patton's forces traversed had at one time been completely controlled by the Sicilian Mafia. Under Benito Mussolini, smashed it through the force of police repression. Now, just prior to the invasion, it was hardly even able to continue shaking down farmers and shepherds for protection money. But the invasion changed all this, and the United States of America put the Mafia back into power. And the Mafia went on to play a very prominent and well-documented role in the American military occupation of Italy. The expedience of war opened the doors to American drug traffic and Mafia domination. The partnership between the American intelligence agencies and the underworld has never been shaken. This, you see, was the beginning of the Mafia United States Intelligence Alliance, an alliance that lasts to this very day and helped to support the covert operations of the Central Intelligence Agency, such as the Iran-Contra operations. In these covert operations, the Central Intelligence Agencies would obtain drugs from South America and Southeast Asia, sell them to the Mafia, and use the money for the covert purchase of military equipment. These operations accelerated when Congress cut off military funding for the Contras. Whenever law enforcement agencies would come close to the source, the supply lines, or the distribution points and network of the drugs, the veil of national security would come down to protect all concerned, including the Mafia. Every sincere effort and investigation into the source of drugs coming into the United States of America have ended up against a solid curtain that has come down in front of the investigators forbidding any further research on their part. That curtain is called the national security. One of the Allies' top occupation priorities in those days was to liberate as many of their own soldiers from garrison duties so that they could participate in the military offensive. In order to accomplish this, Don Calogero's Mafia were pressed into service, and in July of 1943, the Civil Affairs Control Office of the United States Army appointed him mayor of Villalba, and other mafia officials as mayors of other towns in Sicily. As the northern Italian offensive continued, Allied intelligence became very concerned over the extent to which the Italian communist resistance to Mussolini had driven Italian politics to the left. Community party membership had doubled between 1943 and 1944. That's Communist Party membership, folks, had doubled between 1943 and 1944. Huge leftist strikes had shut down factories, and the Italian underground fighting Mussolini had risen to almost 150,000 men. By mid-1944, the situation came to a head, and the United States Army terminated arms drops to the Italian resistance and started appointing mafia officials to occupation administration posts. Mafia groups broke up leftist rallies and reactivated black market operations throughout southern Italy. Now, why did the intelligence community do this instead of dealing with honest, sincere patriots and resistant movement leaders? Simply, folks, there is a rule in intelligence. Remember, I was a member of the Office of Naval Intelligence, and I know what I'm talking about. There is a rule, and that rule is that you live a life of blackmail. You see, they could blackmail the mafia leaders. They could threaten them with exposure, arrest. They could pull the rug out from under them at any time they wanted to. But as long as they dealt with them and the mafia leaders did what they were told, did what they were bidded, they were helped in return. And they were literally handed the country of Italy and the underworld of the United States of America on a silver platter. Now, it worked the other way. Also, ladies and gentlemen, the members of the mafia had the same blackmail abilities over those who worked with them, their case officers, and the intelligence departments, agencies, and operations who dealt with them. And this gave them great power. Haven't you always wondered how a few hoodlums held such control over so many people and so many cities in this country? Why was it that our law enforcement agencies were unable to properly deal with them? I think it is something that all Americans need to know, need to think about, and we need to begin to put together solutions so that these things can never happen again. And how can we do that when the very foundation of the nation is slipping out from within our grasp? The Constitution itself is in danger. But it's in danger, folks, because of years and years and years of these powerful members of the intelligence community and secret societies who have been destroying, subverting the nation from within, often using the guise of patriotism to coerce good men and women to help them in the destruction of this country, not realizing that in their zeal and patriotism, they were actually helping to destroy the nation. Now, 1946, Lucky Luciano was released from prison and deported to Italy, where he rebuilt the heroin trade. The court's decision to release him was made possible by the testimony of intelligence agents at his hearing, and a letter written by a naval officer reciting what Luciano had done for the Navy. Luciano was supposed to have served from 30 to 50 years in prison. Over 100 mafia members were similarly deported within a couple of years. Today, the same alliance goes on between the mafia and the intelligence community, and now law enforcement agencies are included in this strange marriage. The liaison between them is the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith. Has nothing to do with Jews or Judaism, and it has all been documented, and we will get to that, ladies and gentlemen. Luciano set up a syndicate which transported morphine base from the Middle East to Europe, refined it into heroin, and then shipped it into the United States via Cuba. During the 1950s, Marseille in southern France became a major city for the heroin labs, and the Corsican syndicate began to actively cooperate with the mafia in the heroin trade. And those, as you all know, became popularly known as the French Connection. In 1948, our Captain White visited Luciano and his narcotics associate, Nick Gentile, in Europe. Gentile was a former American gangster who had worked for the Allied military government in Sicily. By this time, the Central Intelligence Agency was already subsidizing Corsican and Italian gangsters to oust communist unions from the port of Marseille. American strategic planners saw Italy and southern France as extremely important for their naval bases as a counterbalance to the growing naval forces of the Soviet Union. CIO AFL organizer Irving Brown testified that by the time the Central Intelligence Agency subsidies were terminated in 1953, the United States support was no longer needed because the profits from the heroin traffic was sufficient to sustain operations. Every member of every agency of every intelligence organization in this country knows every single bit of this, ladies and gentlemen. Yet Lieutenant Colonel James Bobo Gritz claims he didn't know anything about no drug smuggling into this country until he heard it from a third world drug lord named Kunzah. And he is a liar. Lieutenant Colonel James Bobo Gritz was a highly placed intelligence officer of the United States Army and was, in fact, the commander of Operation Watchtower in Central America. The duties of Operation Watchtower, ladies and gentlemen, was to provide the navigational towers which the drug traffic and arms planes used to fly from their clandestine bases in Central and South America into military and Central Intelligence Agency bases in the United States with their cargo. The other duties of Operation Watchtower was to protect and provide for the security of those arms and drug flights. You better wake up, America, because you've been had in more ways than one. And if you continue to be stupid and ignorant and apathetic, you will continue to be had. When Luciano was originally jailed, the United States felt it had eliminated the world's most effective underworld leader, and the activities of the mafia were seriously damaged. Mussolini had been waging a war since 1924 to rid the world of the Sicilian mafia. Thousands of mafia members were convicted of crimes and forced to leave the cities and hide out in the mountains. Mussolini's reign of terror had virtually eradicated the international drug syndicates. Regardless of what you think of his politics, he cleaned up drugs in Italy. Combined with the shipping surveillance during the war years, heroin trafficking had become almost nil. Drug use in the United States before Luciano's release from prison and the strange alliance of the mafia and the intelligence agencies was on the verge of being entirely wiped out. Ladies and gentlemen, don't miss tomorrow night, or any night for that matter in this series. If you do, I guarantee you will be sorry. for you are going to have your eyes opened like you have never had them opened before. And I'm going to reach out and slap you upside the head with a 2x4 as hard as I can. You will form your militia units. You will prepare. And when the time comes, you will fight for your freedoms. Good night. And God bless you all.
No words, not crushed. Thank you.